is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Plato and the Tyrant, a new book from James Romm, Professor James Romm, at Bard College. The fall of Greece's greatest dynasty and the making of a philosophic masterpiece, that would be the Republic. I had read the Republic as a student and assumed that it came out of the imagination of one man named Plato. Turns out there's reason to believe it was based upon visits to Sicily, Syracuse, Sicily especially. The last time I was in Syracuse, I was with the British Army clawing its way up the coastline under the guidance and the leadership of the British Army, while Patton made an end run north of the island and then came in from the west. That was the last time I was in Sicily, and it was desperate. The Germans had chopped up the whole island, and it was dry and abandoned, and the people were very poor and were starving. However, now we return to a Sicily in the 4th century BCE that is filled with philosophy and tyranny. Professor, a very good day to you. Forgive my departure, because in reading the story of Sicily in the 4th century BCE, I couldn't help but think about the armies in the 20th century AD, and I wondered if those armies, they were all very educated men, especially the British, I wonder if they reflected upon the matters that you address. We begin with Syracuse itself. It is a city founded by Corinth at war with Carthage, if I remember correctly. Why did it become so prominent and so powerful in the 4th century BCE? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for your interest in the book. So in the 4th century BCE, we have to bear in mind that Athens and Sparta had pretty well knocked each other down to second-rate status. They had fought a terrible war, the Peloponnesian War, that had ended in 404, and both were greatly diminished by that conflict, as well as other cities in mainland Greece. The Greek West, as I call it, the cities of Sicily and southern Italy, had not really been involved in that contest. Well, Syracuse was a target for a while, but had managed to recover itself. And under the tyranny of Dionysius I, who came to power right about 404, the time of the end of the Peloponnesian War, built itself into an immensely powerful and prosperous state.
Yes, that state was based on geography and ambition. Let's talk of the geography first, because you mentioned Dionysius the Elder. He was a clerk, and he became a king, and then he became a tyrant. How did he do it?
So he never quite became a king, although the Greeks of other cities might have considered him that. He called himself Archon, which is a kind of a neutral title, leader, more or less, in Greek, that suggested he was a legitimate ruler. In fact, he came to power as a demagogue, railing against the perfidy of the rich and the betrayal of Syracuse by elite leaders, generals, who were collaborating with the Carthaginians, the great enemy of Syracuse, and conspiring to enrich themselves and do their own country in. And the populace, the masses, were very sympathetic to that argument, and they immediately appointed him as their general, their leader, and from that position, he was able to consolidate power.
He reminded me of Bonaparte, a man who came from outside and was suddenly the emperor himself. But I understand these terms are very critical. I won't use them loosely. Although, again and again, Professor, the 2,500 years in between, we go through this play all the time, and it causes great disorder and chaos and death, and then we go through it again. It's like Syracuse is the original drama, and we keep repeating it. All right, Dionysius the Elder is now the Archon of Syracuse. The geography is important. What is the island, and why is that critical to his power?
So the island was the term that the Syracusans used for a peninsula that was originally an island, but it became attached to the mainland by a causeway. So it's a protrusion off of mainland Syracuse that forms a kind of a separate zone, easily defended by means of a wall across the isthmus and supplied with fresh water by means of a natural spring there, which today is still operating, still running, called the Fonte Arethusa, the Fountain of Arethusa. It was a nymph associated with the mythic history of the place. So this island, the island, was so easily defended, and its supply of fresh water meant that it couldn't be starved out in a siege. And so it became a military base, a kind of fortress for Dionysius the Elder, and then later for his son, Dionysius the Younger. It was a place from which they really could not be forced out except by extreme measures.
Now, for Dionysius, his marrying habits we get confusing. He married two women on the same day. Was that something normal in Greece in the 4th century?
No, it was not. Polygamy was not a Greek custom. It was associated with the Persian monarchy in the East. And the fact that Dionysius adopted it shows that he was, in fact, taking a lesson from those emperors, the Persian emperors, making himself a kind of royal figure, superhuman figure. Of course, polygamy creates all kinds of problems because when you generate children from two different lines, there's a rivalry and sometimes even civil war between the branches. And that is, in fact, what happened in Syracuse.
Yes, two wives each produced two sons. We watch all four sons, but most importantly, the son that will rise to power comes from the wife that is not connected to the hero, goat, victim, protagonist, Dion. Let's do this, if I remember. We have Doris of Locri, one wife, and Aristomache, mm-hmm. The other wife.
Right.
Which one is Dion's sister?
Aristomache.
Right.
The native Syracusan wife.
And Dion is the brother-in-law. So this is a family affair created by this double marriage on one day. Now, we leave this with the fact that the way Dionysius the First, the elder, conducted his office, he did a great deal of drinking. Was that normal?
It seems to have been normal in Syracuse and, of course, other parts of Greece. But Syracusans in particular were known for their riotous high living, including lots of wine. And the ruling family, the Dionysii, were notorious alcoholics.
Yes, they liked their wine. Fine. And there is such a thing as a Syracusan table. Was that a metaphor at the time or is invented because of the wine drinking?
Syracusan tables is a phrase that was popular at the time. It's found in Plato's Republic as a description of this high life, the banqueting tables, especially those of the ruler that supplied lots of feasts, including plenty of wine and also sexual excess, because whenever there's wine and feasting, there's usually also a lot of carrying on.
Yes, a lot of carrying on. I noticed that there are legends about how Dionysius the Elder died. Did he just die? Did he drink himself to death? Was he poisoned? Is there one version or do we entertain all of them?
There are several versions. As often in the case of the deaths of great rulers, no one wants to attribute it to simple disease or old age. There's always a conspiracy theory. In this case, the conspiracy did involve poison, perhaps administered by his doctors to prevent any change in the succession. The plan for the succession was to hand down power to the son of Doris, whose name was also Dionysius. But Dion, from the other line, was perhaps trying to get that changed, trying to get power to descend to his own relatives. And the doctors may have administered poison in order to prevent that from happening.
Here we go to Tolstoy. All happy families are the same, but the unhappy family. When we come back, we're going to discover Plato and his part in this drama. The book is Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty, the Dionysian Dynasty, and the Making of a Philosophic Masterpiece. James Rahm is the author. I'm John Batchelor.